The Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program teamed up with students of TRIO Upward Bound West Garfield, a pre-collegiate program which serves high schoolers from RE2 and Garfield 16 school districts. That's Newcastle to Parachute. TRIO Upward Bound works with first-generation students, meaning they'll be the first in their families to attend college. These bright young people conducted a series of interviews with agents of various institutions about issues pertinent to today. Here is their interview with Parachute Chief of Police Samuel Stewart and Garfield County Sheriff Deputy and Garfield 16 School District's Student Resource Officer James Miller. Take a listen.
Good morning, and thank you for coming to speak with us today.
Thanks for asking us.
What are your names?
I'll go first. My name is Sam Stewart. I'm the Chief of Police in Parachute.
My name is James Miller. I work for the Garfield County Sheriff's Office. I have a couple different hats I work. I am the SRO for Grand Valley, so all the junction schools. So I work for him during the school year, and then once it's summertime, I'm back out just working as a patrol deputy for the Sheriff's Office.
And how long have you worked there?
I've worked for the Sheriff's Office for 16 years.
I've worked for Parachute Police Department for just about 3.5 years. I have 29 years of total law enforcement. I worked for Rifle PD for 16 years before that. And I was in Delta before that.
What led you into the law enforcement field?
For me, it was actually kind of funny. I never wanted to be a police officer. Like, I wasn't one of those kids who grew up like hoping to be a cop. I always wanted to work on cars for a living. So when I left school, that's what I did, and it brought me to working at the county shops just down the road here. So I worked on all the county vehicles, which put me in contact with a lot of the cops because I fixed their cop cars. And after doing that for about 4 years working on cars, I kind of realized I like this as a hobby but not really as a profession. And then I kind of let those guys talk me into trying out law enforcement, and I ended up really loving it, and I've been there 16 years. So.
Myself, I had some family and friends that were in law enforcement. I'm from a little town in north central Iowa, and my dad started the reserve program in my hometown in the 60s. So it's kind of cool to see that he started it. A lot of friends, and I was working out in California, and a buddy of mine was going to the academy. He was with Lodi PD. They were sponsoring him, and he talked me into it. And the meat industry isn't the best place to work all the time, so that's where I was at. But and I went to the academy, been in law enforcement ever since.
What would you say the biggest challenges working for the police department?
For the police department, one of the biggest challenges is the size of the agency, because I only have 5 officers, including me. James is my 6th, but he's only part-time, and he works for the schools. Takes a big burden off of me, though. That's a huge resource for me to have. But the size of the agency, when you're trying to schedule vacations, trainings, and just regular days off, things like that, people get sick, you know, COVID, things like that. I mean, people get sick for 2 or 3 weeks at a time. It does happen, even without COVID. So that's the biggest thing. That's the biggest challenge to have that.
Yeah. I think challenge-wise, it depends on the year. This last year, a lot of it was COVID response and how do we do our job but still be safe and keep everybody else safe. I think a constant for us is staffing. We have a hard time getting people to want to be law enforcement, or people think they want to be law enforcement and then they start the job and realize what it entails, and they realize, hey, this is not what I thought it was going to be, and they bow out, which I respect, because I don't want you to stay here if you're not passionate about it. But that, along with the cost of living in this valley, just makes it hard for us to keep a regular rotation of staff.
It is hard. Also, our job is like 80% paperwork. People don't realize how much paperwork there is to this job. You know, if they'd have told me that a long time ago, I might not have done it.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of people also don't realize, like, you're going to be working shift work. So you're working 12-hour shifts, and you might be working all night for 3 months, and you may work Christmas, and you may work Thanksgiving, and all these kind of stuff. And so it puts a strain on the family that they didn't realize was going to be there until they're actually doing it, and then they realize, hey, I can't do this. So
right. Weekends, holidays, birthdays, they don't mean anything to us.
No. Yep.
It's just a day. Is it Monday or is it July 4th? Doesn't matter. It's just a work day.
As you know, police conduct is under a microscope all over the country. Have the effects of that impacted the Parachute Police Department directly, and how so?
Absolutely. There's been current legislation and previous legislation last year on Senate Bill 217 that did a lot of things that are just going to affect all the agencies. As far as certain things like body cameras, we have them already. I don't know if you have yours on.
No, we don't have
them. I know
yet.
They're experimenting with them. We had this since 2016. So this is already a place when I worked there. So they've had body cameras for a long time. I love body cameras. I have no problem with that at all. When I worked in rifle before, they had recorders, audio recorders, and all the officers use that. So I was used to recording anyway. And I think it's a great thing. Tracking of all of contacts, every contact we come into, every suspect we have to, there's certain demographics we have to keep track of. Eventually we have to report it to the state. They got rid of chokeholds. We never really used a chokehold. It was called a carotid restraint control hold, what we used. Business cards now, on the back of our business cards, we had to redo all of our business cards because on the back it has to have on how to file a complaint. So comments or complaints, I put that on the back of there because you have to have that on the back of your business card now. So that's a money thing. Things like that. We have a lot of support in our community. I would say a lot of support for law enforcement, even Garfield County. We have a strong support for law enforcement, so that helps.
Yeah, I think we've done a good job of fostering good relationships with our community, so they understand who we are and how we operate. So I haven't seen anything super negative in that aspect. Things that worried me this year were some of the responses to that. Was they were talking about removing school resource officers out of schools. And I know the impact that I have in my school. And I coach football. I work in the concession stands during basketball games. Like, I'm just there to build a relationship with those kids. At Grand Valley, you get to ask a staff member who's made an impact on your life to hand you your diploma. And every year I've worked there, I've had at least two, if not more, kids ask me to hand them their diploma. This year I got voted to be their commencement speaker. So I know the impact that I have on those kids' lives and helping them see that law enforcement isn't just this scary uniform and a gun. There's a person behind here, and we get to connect and have those relationships. And so it kind of worried me that I felt like we were kind of knee-jerk reacting, and then we were going to remove all the police officers out of schools and take away that positive benefit that we can actually have when we get to sit down and do this kind of stuff. Because I get brought into social studies classes to have these kind of conversations all the time at our high school down there. And I think they're very beneficial for the kids. And so I just think there's a lot of misinformation about what an SRO is and what they actually do on a day-to-day basis. And so that kind of scared me. But other than that, I didn't feel anything negative from our community. Like he said, I think we have a lot of support from our community for what we do.
We do. We have a lot of support. And I agree with him on the SRO program. I mean, I think it's ridiculous to pull the SROs out. I mean, Denver Public School District did it. And I think about 3 years from now, they're going to realize what they did was wrong. And they're going to feel the effects of it. And unfortunately, the students are going to be the ones that are going to lose. You know, the teachers in the school district will, but I think the students are going to lose out more. I really do. They're going to lose a lot of positive experience and a lot of positive relationships with officers.
One element of concern is police brutality or excessive force. What sort of training is required to prevent the use of excessive force?
I think you just have to have a good quality program for arrest control. I think you need to follow those. Follow that. You got to have You got to have good tools in your toolbox, but you don't want to have too many. And there's some arrest control techniques and programs out there that have too many tools in the toolbox. Make it simple. Also, you got to have quality officers. Hiring quality people. You know, if you don't have quality people, it doesn't matter how much training you put into them. If they're not going to use that training and do it the proper way, it's not going to matter what you train them.
Yeah, I agree. It's a lot about your force program. We use the FBI program. It's taught and sponsored by the FBI. And then it's your training. So your veteran officers mentoring your newer guys about how do we keep a situation calm and under control without having to go to hands-on techniques, all those kind of things. But I think there's also a little bit of misunderstanding with the public in that sometimes you can't reason somebody out of something. Sometimes force is absolutely necessary. And that's, I think, where some of the disconnect comes between when people see something happening with an officer without having been there and understand that context, is they don't realize that de-escalation sometimes does mean we have to use force to stop that situation. Because we have a priority of life that we have to look at and who we have to protect. So we have to protect innocent people and bystanders and victims. Then we have to protect ourselves. Then comes our SWAT guys, because they put themselves in more danger being on the SWAT team. And then lastly is that suspect who might be putting somebody's life at danger. And that's what we have to look at when we're dealing with a situation. So if I go into a situation, Sam's holding me hostage and the gun's in his pocket or something, we can do a lot more talking, because at this point he's not threatening anybody's life. But as soon as that gun comes out and he starts pointing it at an innocent person, now I've got to that point where I have to protect the priority of life, which innocent people and victims are at the top priority of life. That suspect's life is at the bottom, so I have to intervene. But a lot of the public, because we don't have these kind of conversations very often, don't really understand that that's what we have to look at. Or if he starts pointing that gun at me, once again, we're at a part where my priority of life is above his, because if he takes me out, there's nobody here to keep him from hurting any of the innocent people. So I think with more education, there'd be more of an understanding on why officers do things, because that's what has to go through our head. And a lot of time, it goes through our head in a split second. And I can tell you, I don't know about Sam, but I've allowed a suspect to put my life in danger probably a little more than I should have, because I didn't want to do anything to him. None of us are here.
I think most officers have. I think most officers would have done that.
Yeah.
I have. Just because you don't want to hurt that person. You don't want to go there. You really don't. None of us do. That's the last thing we want to do is to have to take somebody's life.
Yeah. I can't speak for everybody. And you always have, every once in a while, that evil person who's in disguise that nobody really realized was that kind of person. But the majority of officers I've talked with, none of us want to do that. We took this job because we want to protect people, not because we want to hurt people.
Absolutely.
So, but that is in our code of what we have to do. If I don't intervene, and then he takes some innocent person's life, now I'm in even more. Like, I got to live with the fact that now that innocent person lost their life because I failed to act, than if I take the suspect's life and save the innocent person's life. So.
I mean, there's been a big focus on de-escalation techniques, and de-escalation's been training. We've been training that for years, forever. One of my things is I have a good ability to talk to people and reason with them, and that has kept me out of a lot of use of force situations.
Yeah. But a lot of those, for me to talk you down, you have to be reasonable. Mm-hmm. So if you're extremely high on something, you're not in a place of reason, so you can't be reasoned with. If you're in an extremely emotional situation, the court's ordered somebody to take away your kids or whatever it may be, you're in a fit of rage, you can't be reasoned with. And those are the kind of situations that we usually get called into to try to handle, is a situation where somebody's out, they're not reasonable at that point in time.
And I would say that even the over-emotional people are sometimes worse than the people that are high or drunk.
Mm-hmm.
They just can't control their emotions. They can't. Stop. They can't stop and see and just take a breath.
The Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program teamed up with students of TRIO Upward Bound West Garfield, a pre-collegiate program which serves high schoolers from RE2 and Garfield 16 school districts. That's Newcastle to Parachute. TRIO Upward Bound works with first-generation students, meaning they'll be the first in their families to attend college. These bright young people conducted a series of interviews with agents of various institutions about issues pertinent to today. Here is their interview with Parachute Chief of Police Samuel Stewart and Garfield County Sheriff Deputy and Garfield 16 School District's Student Resource Officer, James Miller. Take a listen.
So, like, for how long is your guys' training? And do you think it's long enough?
So, our initial training through the police academy is 12 weeks. Is that right?
Yours was, mine was 16.
Yeah. So, it's 12 to 16 weeks.
Every state.
Yeah, just depending on the, and that's where you get your basics. And then you come into an agency, and depending on the agency, you have so many hours that you have to do. We have state mandated. My agency does more. So like arrest control, which is the force on force and how to, we have 4 blocks of 4 hours every year. So we're doing 16 hours of that specific training. And then we have our handguns training, we have our driving training, and then we go through legal updates every year where we talk with the attorneys and they tell us here's what's changed in the laws and all that kind of stuff. So at least for my agency, I know they do a great job of making sure that we have all the training that's available to us so that they get the most professional officers they can.
Absolutely. And I'm the same way. I was a training coordinator for years at Rifle PD, and I still handle it here at the Parachute Police Department. And matter of fact, at 1 o'clock, I'll be out to the range today for rifle training. So, and you never stop learning. That's one thing, you never stop learning. Training programs like that, ours is generally about 3 months for field training. And then, is that officer ready? Is that officer not ready? Do you have to extend that? Is there other things you can do? One thing about being in a small agency, you don't get exposed to as much as you would in a larger agency. You don't get the type of calls. Now, sometimes that happens. Our last kid that went through FTO, he got exposed to a lot, you know, which is good. You want that. You want him to get exposed to that, a lot of those calls.
So in the police blotter, we saw that a lot of the incidents have occurred in Cottonwood View apartments. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about what concerns arise there?
Well, it's not really a concern of mine, but when you look at it, there's 8 buildings with 24 apartments. So that's 192 apartments, 192 residences. So if you take that and then concentrate that into the whole town of Parachute, that's 30 to 40% of the population. So when such a population is controlled and condensed, you're going to have more calls there. You just will.
And we see it up in Battlement too, our apartment complexes, because it's one address. Mm-hmm. You'll see way more calls to these one addresses because that's just, it's a higher density of people. So it's just a numbers game. You have more people living there, more families there, a higher number of possibilities for anything to happen.
Right.
Vehicle break-ins, domestic disputes, anything like that. Whereas you have one address that's a single family house, that's a family of 4 or 6 or whatever it may be, we probably rarely get a call there. Maybe once every blue moon.
Right.
And so that address doesn't come up that often because it's just that one family who doesn't need our help that often.
It's just higher concentration.
No.
I think your RV park is the same way up there.
Yeah.
On top. You have a lot of people living in RVs in that area. And now, especially since the pandemic, people are realizing they can work from home a lot more. So they are traveling and living in RVs because it's cheaper and they can move wherever they want to. Well, they have an RV park on the top of Battlement at the end of Stone Quarry.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of calls up there too because of the concentration of people.
How do you feel about being women being police officers? How many female patrol officers currently work at the Parachute Police Department? And are the female officers paid equally compared to male officers?
I'll go first. We don't have any female officers.
No?
Nope. Nope, they just haven't applied. I worked with many female officers that are outstanding officers. And the pay is always going to be the same.
Yeah.
And especially in small agencies, this is what your step is and that's what you're going to go to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same thing. We just don't have any.
I want to say it was roughly around 5. So we have 4 patrol deputies who are out just answering calls for service. And then we have one female who works in our detective division. So she's in when we have a crime that requires more follow-up and more investigation than we can handle between our calls, then it gets sent over to the detectives and they handle that. So that's for our patrol. For like our detention staff, because we have deputies who work in our jail at the Garfield County Sheriff's Office, too many for me to just name off the top of my head. There's a lot of females who work in there. I'm the same way. Some of the best partners I've had have been females. They bring a different dynamic than a guy does. They bring a different way of looking at a situation. And that's what we're always looking for, because we show up on scene and it's a high stress situation, and I may get very focused on here's the problem and here's how I think I need to fix it. And somebody else comes along and goes, hey, well, what if we think about this? And that kind of gets me away from this tunnel vision and goes, oh, yeah, that'd probably be a better way to do it. We may get a better reaction from the suspect. And I see that with even different guys who have had different upbringings than each other, but I see it a lot with a lot of our female officers too. So. And yeah, we're the same way. You come in at a set rate, and then your performance evaluations determine what your raise is every year. So, but we all start out on the same level playing field.
What is the most common call you get?
For me, and probably for him too, civil calls. Calls about child custody, calls about neighbor issues, dogs barking, things like that. We get a lot of civil things. VIN inspections. That's our most common one. It really is.
Yeah.
That's the most common calls we get are the civil questions.
It's the boring stuff. Like my neighbor's dog won't stop barking.
yeah.
But yeah, I'd say my most common in a day is a VIN inspection. So if you buy a car in Kansas and you want to bring it over here and get license plates, we have to come out and check your VIN to make sure it isn't stolen before Colorado will give you a Colorado title and Colorado license plates. Yep. So we do a lot of those. I'd say I do probably 3 or 4 VIN inspections a day. So that's probably like our most common call. If you're wanting like common criminal call,
domestics
disputes, so family arguments and fights,
disturbances kind of thing.
And then that next one would be like thefts. So somebody broke into somebody's car over the night or something like that. Somebody broke into my shed and stole my tools.
Yep.
Those would probably be our two highest up there criminal complaints that we have.
We could really lower those if people would just lock their doors.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously, lock your car doors. You can't believe it's crimes of opportunity.
Yeah.
And the thefts, it's just that's what brings people out. I mean, you got somebody walking along and they're just trying car doors.
Yeah. They'll just walk through Walmart parking lot just trying doors. Yep. And as soon as the one opens, they open it, they rummage through it real quick, grab what's expensive and close it.
There was years ago, probably 10 years ago, there was a guy in Rifle that did it. I think it was 72 cars he tried. He tried it in the snow, so our detectives took it and they checked. They could see his tracks going up and checking all the car doors. And then he walked home. But it was all crimes of opportunity. But he tried 72 vehicles. He didn't get into too many, but that's what it is.
Well, thank you very much for your time today, and thank you for your service to our community. Is there anything else you would like to add?
We appreciate you giving us the opportunity to speak to you.
And I'd say, if any of you or any of your listeners ever thought about law enforcement, the Sheriff's Office, along with Parachute PD and a bunch of the police departments around here, we started an Explorers program, which actually gives young people the ability to come out and try police training. So we do a lot of the stuff that we do. We teach them how to do traffic stops. They go out to the range and learn firearm safety and how to shoot a gun. They learn the force-on-force techniques from our instructors. So they learn how to arrest somebody, how to use the proper restraints, controls, all that kind of stuff. So even if you're necessarily not wanting to try law enforcement, but you just want to come get an education and see what it's like to be a cop, it's a pretty cool thing. So during the summer, we're every other Sunday, it's like the first and third Sunday that we meet up here at the annex, across from the airport here in Rifle. And then during the school year, we move it to based on like kids' athletic programs and that kind of stuff. But it's a pretty cool program, and it allows people to kind of see, put themselves in our shoes a little bit, and get an understanding of where we're coming from.
There's also Citizens Academies.
Yeah, Rifle does one.
Rifle does one. We're too small. It's so hard to do that because it's about a 2-week academy. But it all depends if you want to do it every night or like once a week. Like that, you can extend them out. But I'd encourage anybody to do a Citizens Academy.
Yeah, or do a ride along.
Simple ride along. Now that we're allowing them again, now that COVID, because we had to stop them, we just did. There was too much.
Yep. But yeah, you can come fill out paperwork at basically any police department allows them.
Yeah.
So you can fill out paperwork saying, "Hey, I'd like to do a ride along," and then you just come sit in a car with me and watch me do work for however long you want to. But it gives you kind of a basic understanding of what we do and how we operate. So
absolutely.
It's a very open opportunity for people if they want to see how their law enforcement agency in their area is operating. Go take advantage of those things because we're very open about it. You can come sit with us and we can go stop cars and do VIN inspections and listen to dogs.
Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks. Like I said, thanks for having us. Yeah, cool. We enjoy doing this stuff.
The Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program teamed up with students of TRIO Upward Bound West Garfield, a pre-collegiate program which serves high schoolers from RE2 and Garfield 16 school districts. It's Newcastle to Parachute. TRIO Upward Bound works with first-generation students, meaning they'll be the first in their families to attend college. These bright young people conducted a series of interviews with agents of various institutions about issues pertinent to today. You just heard their interview with Parachute Chief of Police Samuel Stewart and Garfield County Sheriff Deputy and Garfield 16 School District's Resource Officer James Miller. This project has been a collaboration between TRIO Upward Bound West Garfield and the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program. For those interested in learning more about TRIO Upward Bound West Garfield, visit coloradomtn.edu/academics/college-prep/upward-bound.